The writer strike is over. The actor strike is not. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The Hollywood writers strike is over. After nearly 5 months, the Writers Guild of America last night told its members they're free to go back to work. Writers can now review the wording of a proposed contract before they vote on that in the coming weeks. Marketplace's Nova Safo is here with more.
Yeah, and that contract looks like a lot of big victories for writers on key concerns around practices at streaming services, the potential use of artificial intelligence. Series writers won minimum staffing requirements and guaranteed weeks of employment. Those are set depending on various factors having to do with budgets and how long projects are expected to last. Bottom line, understaffing was a big complaint for writers, so this is a significant victory. Another big issue, artificial intelligence. The agreement is that studios cannot compel writers to use AI. Writers can if they choose to, and studios agree. AI also cannot be considered a writer on a show as far as the contract is concerned. The studios had initially rejected these demands, according to the union. So again, a big victory for writers. There are also significant pay increases in this contract, David.
All right, writers, but actors are still on strike. No negotiations there at this point?
That's right, none yet. The Actors Union last night actually put out a statement saying they don't have confirmed dates to meet with studios. They're trying to tamp down expectations, which are that the two sides will talk actually fairly soon. Actors have a lot of the same concerns as writers, so there's a template now. The writers themselves still have to ratify their tentative contract agreement. They have a couple of weeks to do it. For audiences, shows are going to start coming back on air, especially ones that require quick writing, like talk shows, late night, daytime shows. And the writers are also free to begin drafting scripts for series and films, David.
All right, Nova Safo, thank you. We watch a documentary a month for what we call Econ Extra Credit. This time it's City of Gold, a celebration of Los Angeles through the eyes of a noted food writer, the late Jonathan Gold. The LA Times critic made a point of lifting up restaurants and food trucks set up to super serve the diverse communities that surround them. Our Econ Extra Credit newsletter has been exploring these themes all month. Here today is Pascal Marcelli, a professor and the director of the Food Studies Program at San Diego State University. She's written about the economic position of neighborhood non-chain restaurants. Professor, welcome.
Thank you.
You know, celebrating more cultures is a good thing, and independent restaurants, often set up to serve the needs of a specific local culture, are crucial engines of the economy of a neighborhood. I think you've found people who are not local coming by to eat presumably help bring dollars to a part of town that might be underserved in the positive category.
Right. A lot of the restaurants in less visited, lower income neighborhoods often struggle. And so bringing in extra dollars in these communities is a good thing. What we've also noticed is that as people start becoming a little bit more interested in some of these neighborhoods, you have an influx of dollars from the outside in terms of investment as well. And so the restaurants that are seen as successful are often the ones that are funded by capital from the outside. That extra capital allows these places to attract these newcomers, and they often mean that the dollars don't stay in the community.
It's not just the outside capital that can lead to an uneven playing field. The well-funded newer restaurants versus the existing restaurants is that some of the existing restaurants may not have the same, you know, legal team that can get them the right permits. It might not have the same access to the infrastructure they would need to compete.
Yes, definitely. In my research, I found that many so-called ethnic food businesses are very often struggling, and they, for example, have very limited access to capital. So there's a lot of financial literacy that is needed, but that's probably not even the most important part. I think a lot of people might have that literacy, but they don't have access to resources.
People trying to align their interest in food with making communities better for people who live there. What are some guides that come to mind if you're trying to essentially explore food in a way that makes the world a better place or a community a better place.
It's important to say that there's nothing wrong with appreciating food and wanting to try some small restaurants in neighborhoods that are less typically frequented by so-called foodies. But I think that foodies have a responsibility as well, and they have a responsibility to educate themselves and to reflect on the impacts of the consumption. Many of these businesses first emerged to serve unmet needs in an area that is often kind of abandoned or left out by mainstream retailers. They also emerged to provide employment opportunities to local residents. And the ones that are drawing the most attention are not necessarily doing that anymore. So we have a responsibility to learn about these things. I think that's the best we can do as consumer, is becoming more aware and, you know, maybe avoiding businesses that are part of a big conglomerate or part of a chain, but really look for the independent businesses that are locally owned, that might even be a worker co-op or that hires local residents. Try to learn about these things. I know it's not very easy, but maybe we have a responsibility to do that.
Pascal Marcelli is a professor of geography and director of both the Urban Studies and Food Studies programs at San Diego State University. Among her books, The $16 Taco, Contested Geographies of Food, Ethnicity, and Gentrification. Professor, thanks.
Thank you for having me.
One documentary a month on marketplace topics. Follow along with our Econ Extra Credit newsletter. If you haven't already signed up, you can do so free at marketplace.org/newsletters. I'm David Brancaccio with our morning report. You're from APM, American Public Media.